And so here we are, almost 4th of July. I love this holiday. This holiday just has a special place in my heart because 4th of July is about freedom. It's about taking a stand for what you believe. It's believing in the ability to make a difference in our world. You know, something happened 236 years ago that life changed on this planet. And we need to look at and understand that it's not just about the birth of a nation. It's not just about something that happened that caused, you know, the birth of the United States of America, but it's how the divine, how we partnership and how we have this wonderful relationship with the divine presence within us so that it can change our lives, change the world, and make us and this place a better place to live, right? Isn't that what freedom is all about? You know, I love, as you sang, you know, it's not red, white, blue, pink. I mean, it doesn't matter. We're all the same. It's all about freedom that is within. And so something happened. What is this something, this shift that took place? You know, it was really a mess at that time. There was this king named George. And King George, he had this, this taxation on the people to fight unjust wars. And so a small group of people got together, and we would call them maybe a mastermind partnership. But it was not everybody. It was a small group of people that got together and caught a new vision. And they couldn't really point anywhere to anything in the world where, you know, the idea of this vision was happening. You know, you might be able to look to the Iroquois tribes, the Native Americans. They had, at that time, developed a kind of a representative kind of government. And it's been actually documented that the founding fathers went to and got some information from these Native American tribes. But you couldn't point anywhere that said, this is where freedom lives. This is where freedom works. This is where a government of the people, for the people, and by the people really is thriving, because nobody had ever tried it before. It was a brand new idea. And so we have this small group of people that out of this vision that they caught, they made this declaration. Isn't that how you and I create? You know, we get to a point in our lives where, you know, we're experiencing some tough times. And so we go into prayer, we catch a new vision. And then even though there's nothing in our life that says we can do it, have it, or be it, we make that declaration anyway. And so what was the declaration that our founding fathers made? We probably all can recite it from school, right? We hold these truths to be self-evident. Now, I really hope in the next few days you take some moments to really be grateful that this group of men, you know, declared that it is that we hold these truths not as a possibility. Maybe, I hope so. No, they held these truths to be self-evident. And what were they? That all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They caught that vision, and then they made that declaration. And within 100 years, actually, in less than 100 years later, the bloodiest of all wars on the American soil was fought. And it was Abraham Lincoln who said these words, and this is part of the Gettysburg Address. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation. And I love this next phrase, conceived in an idea. Doesn't everything begin as an idea? This country began as an idea, conceived as an idea, and that idea was liberty, that freedom within us. It was dedicated to a proposition that all men, we're all the same, we're created equal. And now we are engaged in a civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived, any idea so conceived, so dedicated, can long endure. We are men on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of this field, as a final resting place for those who gave their lives so that this nation might live. And it is altogether fitting and proper that we do so. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here. Isn't that true? But we can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living. And I really want us to hear this next sentence. It is for us, the living, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work. And it was unfinished, wasn't it? It was three more generations before all men became and all women. Ladies, we could actually own property and vote. You know, what were they thinking? How could they have left us out? You know, we couldn't even conceive of that in today's world, could we? I mean, what were they smoking, you know? That they forgot. And then it wasn't until the 1960s that we were rallied together in the great civil rights movement. And a young black Southern Baptist minister, he rallied the Americans again to fulfill its promise. You know, and he again spoke of a new vision, a bigger dream. And just like our founding fathers, he declared it to be so. And then he staked his life on it. He risked everything. He put his life into action. He gave it away, just like our founding fathers did. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he was assassinated shortly after he said these words. I have been to the mountaintop, and I've seen the promised land, and I cannot be unhappy tonight. I cannot be unhappy because I know we're going to get there. And I may not be there with you, but I've already seen it. I've already seen it. That's what vision does. That's what great dreams do. They lift us to a higher, bigger place. And here it is, 2012, and the work is still unfinished. And today, you know, we're taking another stand. Today, we're saying that these same unalienable rights are here for gays and lesbians, for bisexuals and transgender. God leaves no one out. God doesn't have any favorites. God loves each of us equally. Equally. And so we're being pushed to move forward into this great idea called freedom. And we're asked to have a new understanding and to really expand our consciousness to include all people everywhere so no one is left out. No one. Now, the Dalai Lama talks about compassion. And I love it. Freedom and compassion. You just sang about it. And he says that compassion is a tremendous power that motivates us to keep the dream alive. To really begin, you know, keep creating that place where all people matter. Compassion, according to the Dalai Lama's definition, means a wish that all people are free from suffering. Wish that all people. And so, you know, our job is to have a compassion so strong that it motivates us to take action. And the Dalai Lama says that the first stage of compassion is a wish that we just simply desire that all people are free from suffering. And so if you're driving along the road and you see a car broken down, you begin to think, I wish AAA would come here. Begins with a wish. Not much happens. It doesn't change the world. But it begins to shift our thoughts. And then we move into the second stage of compassion that the Dalai Lama says we're actually moved to take action. So again, we pass by that person broken down on the side of the road and we actually stop. We take out our cell phone. We call AAA because we want to help. We want to support that person. We want to take action. But the Dalai Lama also warns us. He says that sometimes our desire to help and to support someone can come from a place within us that's very immature because we haven't really done the inner work ourselves. It's those times when we try to fix someone. Anybody ever been there? Tried to fix someone? And what happens? You create a greater mess than before, right? That's why Albert Einstein said, I love this, you can't solve a problem from the same consciousness that created it. You've got to change. Your consciousness has to change. So that's why the Dalai Lama encourages us to really develop our meditation life. And so that we can go deep within to a place that we can begin to, that vibration of insight and wisdom. So that we're guided to help. We don't just jump in and fix it, but we step back and we are guided to step in and help. We're guided to be helpful and supportive. You know, in this community, we're really blessed because we have, as a spiritual community, we've been awakening to the genuine desire to make a positive difference in the world. And beginning today, you've seen in your bulletin for last month as well, but we are partnering with the Crossroads Community Center, which supports underprivileged children. And they're right in our backyard. They're right around the corner. And so we are doing two collections this month. They're asking us to, we went to them and Suzanne went and said, how can we help? How can we partner? And so we are this month collecting toys. And this is in advance of Christmas. They said, you know, we'd really love to start collecting toys for Christmas so we're not jammed up against a deadline. And so for the month of July, there's a bin in the atrium, and we're asking you to bring in new, they're asking for new non-violent. So I'm assuming that's no guns and shoot 'em up kind of thing. So it's going to be hard to pick out some toys, isn't it? But new non-violent toys, bring them in any ages and put them in the bin. The other thing we're doing is they said there is a shortage of food. So they called it an emergency food drive. And this is for, and I was just horrified. This food will be for people living in their cars. There's something wrong about that. That in Bellevue, Washington, with Microsoft down the street and headquarters for all these big, huge corporations, that there are people actually living in their cars. I don't know about you, that doesn't sit well with me. But we're going to help. We're going to do what we can at this moment, and they're in need of food. So there's a list in your bulletin for of what you can bring in. Things with pop tops and things that don't need to be heated or cooked or can openers. Think about what you would want if you were living in your car. And so bring those supplies in. So for the month of July, we're going to be having those bins in the atrium and collecting those toys and food supplies. And I think it's exciting that we're already living into our new purpose statement. As you leave today, you'll be handed a piece of paper that has a document that has our new purpose statement, our new core values, and our vision statement. And this is a result of months of the visioning team taking all the information that you supplied to us in that day of discovery last March. Seems like ages ago, just a few months ago. But we came together on a Sunday for 6 hours. We interviewed each other. We talked about our best experiences. We talked about what we value about this spiritual community. We talked about what we'd like to be a part of to make happen here in the future. And the visioning team got together. They took all that information from the presentation. Remember, you voted with dots about what you thought was most important for a couple of weeks. And And so we took all that information and compiled it and analyzed it and came up with a new purpose statement, core values, and a vision statement. We want you to let us know whether we got it or missed it. So on your way out, you'll get that document. You'll be able to look it over, take it home, pray about it, sit with it. And there's a feedback, a little half sheet attached to it, that we want your feedback about, you know, did we get it? Did we miss it? We think we did a pretty good job, but I just want to share with you our purpose statement because it really fits into what we're talking about today. But Unity of Bellevue is a spiritual community that nourishes and supports personal growth to make a positive difference in our world. Isn't that nice? Isn't that great? Let's say that together. Unity of Bellevue is a spiritual community that nourishes and supports personal growth to make a positive difference in our world. And so just, you know, be with that. Pray about it. See, does that capture the essence of our spiritual community? And then we took a look at all of the presentations. And bless Betty Gibbelew's heart, she mapped them all and put them into Excel spreadsheets. And under the value area, what really popped up were five words that was very clear. This is what you value as a spiritual community. And those words came out to be love, acceptance, inclusiveness, integrity, community. And then we have on that document, you'll see we've expanded and have a statement about each of the core values and then a vision statement. And so want to make sure to pick that up on your way out. And there'll be some people from the visioning team in the atrium that will be there to answer any questions for you or talk further about it. You might have to just take it home and be with it for a week or so, but we'd love your feedback by July 15th. And so I'd like to end today with this amazing story about Larry Walters, who lived in Southern California. One day he made the evening news because he did something not real smart, but amazing. Now, if you were here for my tryout talk in September of 2010, you heard me tell this story. And it's a story that I love, and it's a story you'll probably hear again and again because I think it has a great message. But Larry Walters always wanted to fly, but his eyes weren't good enough to get into the Air Force. He didn't have the education, and he didn't have the money to take flying lessons. And Larry lived under the flight pattern of the Los Angeles airport. And so he'd sit out in his backyard in L.A. in his aluminum lawn chair, and he would watch the planes go overhead. And one day Larry got an idea. He went and he got 45 surplus weather balloons, and he filled them with helium, and he tied them to his aluminum lawn chair. This is a true story. He strapped on a six-pack of beer, a parachute, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and a BB gun, just in case his plan didn't go perfectly, he'd have a way back down. When he untied the ropes that secured him, instead of shooting 30 feet up, which is what he had planned, and from 30 feet he'd get a pretty nice view. But when he undid the ropes that secured him, he shot up 15,000 feet right into the oncoming traffic of LAX. Can you imagine what those pilots must have thought? I told you it was an amazing but not very smart thing to do. But when he was interviewed, he was asked, "Larry, why did you do it?" And Larry responded by saying, "Well, you can't just sit there. You can't just sit there." We all need a little bit of Larry Walters within us, right? Because we can look out at the world today and we can say, boy, it doesn't look good. I don't know how to fix it. I don't know how to make it better. So I'll just sit here. But each one of us does have a little bit of Larry Walters in us that says, you know what? I can do something. I can pray. I can catch a new vision. I can do something to make this world a better place. You know, Larry, in his wonderful and unique way, I think, opened up, you know, a whole new world of possibilities for us. Actually, his story inspired the movie Up, if you remember that movie. That was based on the Larry Walters story. And so we are being called. We're being called to make a difference in the world, to make a commitment, to dedicate ourselves, just like our founding fathers did, a commitment to take a risk. To take a risk. Because again, we can look out at the world out there and we can say, watching the news, we can say, boy, now it looks like the cries of the end of a dream. Or maybe it's the labor pains of an awakening world. And so you and I are here to take a stand, just like our founding fathers did. And if it will be so, it will be because you and I took a stand. We took a stand for this divine idea called freedom. God bless you. Have a wonderful, safe, and very happy 4th of July. God bless.